You're with Aubrey Masango
on 702. Let's walk the talk.
Stanley Becker joins me now. Stanley, good evening to you. Are you well, my brother? Stanley there. Hello, Stanley? It appears Stanley's not there. Let's see if we can't connect with Stanley. If you knew for sure, in other words, if you knew with mathematical certainty that if I do A, B, and C, I will absolutely guaranteed get the wealth that I'm looking for, would you follow those guidelines? Give me a call. I'm going to be having a conversation in a few moments' time with Stanley Beckett. He is author and founder at Change Creator SA. And he is going to be speaking to us about a thing that he calls the law of compensation. Now, the idea that something is a law is quite important for us to understand. This means that it is a principle that cannot fail if applied according to its rules. I'm really looking forward to that conversation as we change platforms. Hopefully we'll be able to connect with Stanley Beckett. Are you aware? Are you familiar with the law of compensation? Give me a call and let me know what you understand by it. What does it mean to you, the law of compensation? That's the conversation Stanley Beckett and I are going to have. I believe he is now available over the telephone line. Stanley, good evening to you. Are you well this evening, my brother?
Yes, good evening to you and all the listeners.
Excellent stuff. The law of compensation. First of all, I want to talk about the very idea that this thing is a law. I mean, that's pretty powerful. I mean, that is something that almost forces me to accept its credibility. Why do we call it a law of compensation?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. Actually, a great question to start the evening off with. And I actually want to just go back to something you also said in the introduction to this. I'm on the same mission as you are, Aubrey. And the mission is to help people to start becoming financially free and to move ahead in their lives financially and to understand that the power to do that has always been within each and every single one of us. But we weren't taught these things, you know. The things I'm learning now, and I've had the privilege of learning these past few decades of my life, I realize we don't get taught these things in school. We don't get taught these things in our churches. We don't get taught these things from our parents because they didn't know it themselves. And if we don't understand these things, we really are a prisoner in our own lives and feeling stuck and helpless. And my desire is to help people understand these concepts and to break themselves free from these limitations we put upon ourselves. But in order to do that, we need to understand these rules, the laws. We call them the laws of life. And your question being, what is a law? I call it a universal law. So what do I mean by a universal law? So the example I often like to use is if we go and stand on top of a building and you jump, what's going to happen? You're going to fall, right? And it doesn't matter if you are
on your football scene.
Exactly. Right. And it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Sure.
And it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. It doesn't matter if you are South African, Chinese, American, Indian. It doesn't matter if you're black or white. It doesn't matter. It doesn't even matter if you believe you're going to fall or if you don't believe you're going to fall. None of those things matter, you know?
Trust me, after the fall, you will be a believer.
You will be a believer, exactly, right?
Yes.
And that is a law we all understand because we see it in our lives every day, and we call that the universal law of gravity. And why do we call it a universal law? It's because it works universally for everybody, and it doesn't play favorites. You know, the law doesn't sit there and say, you know what, Aubrey, today I like you, so if you jump off the building, I'm going to make you float. But I don't like that person today, so if that person jumps, I'm going to make them fall. The law works the same. And it's absolutely impersonal, and it's a law that we've been able to observe and understand through observation.
Yeah.
Now, there's many, many, many such laws that we can understand as we start observing them. They are universal. They are not, we can go and get upset and we can toy and we can do all the things we want to do, but it's not going to change the law. The law doesn't care.
Yeah.
It doesn't care what
these are. These are the brutally objective laws, yeah?
Absolutely. And if you are sitting there tonight and you are saying, what can I do? You know, I have no money, I have no job, I have no prospects. What can I do? I am here, I'm learning these laws and I'm trying to teach these laws to people to say everything you need to turn any situation in your life already within you. But you've got to learn how to work with these laws. You've got to learn how to activate them and to work with them instead of against them. So my part of what my mission is and part of what our mission is within the Change Creators sphere is to teach this to people, to help people understand. Because I realized this at some stage in my life. I look back and I said, you know what, I wish I could have gone back to when I was a youngster. I mean, just think how different your life would be, Aubrey, today, if you could go back in time and tell a young Aubrey the things you know today.
Yep.
You know, how different the choices you would have made,
yep,
the things you would have done. And I realize there isn't a time machine I can climb into and go back in time. But what I can do is help people today to understand that, especially our youth of today, who, I mean, we're sitting with such a high unemployment rate. I think I stand corrected, but I think it's almost above 50% for people below the youth below the age of 25. They are going to have to think different about life. They are going to have to think different about themselves, their place in life. And that is why it's such a passion for us to teach these laws to people. And one of the most important laws when it comes to the creation of wealth, when it comes to making money, when it comes to understanding why do some people get paid so much money and why do some people get paid so little money, then you need to understand the law of compensation. And tonight I'm going to use two examples with you. We actually, as you know, we always have our Monday night group where we discuss these things, and this was the topic this week. And it was just so powerful that I felt I have to share this tonight with our listeners as well. So tonight I'm going to use two examples, one being a person who is a cleaner in your home, okay, someone who cleans inside a home or cleans inside an office, right, which we can both agree works very hard. I mean, sometimes I often, when I'm driving and I see people walking, I offer them lifts and I go drop them off. And then I speak to them and I get to hear their stories. And I hear about how these people wake up half past three in the morning in that ice cold, and they walk and they get on a bus. And then they drive three buses to get to their place of work. And they work till 5 o'clock in the evening and they get on another three buses. And they get home at 7, 8 o'clock at night. Then they still have to try and eat something before going to sleep, doing it all the next day.
Yeah.
These people work really hard, but they make so little money. Why is that? And then, so I'm going to use that as my first example. The second, on the other side of that, I'm going to use an example of something we all know, a soccer player like Lionel Messi, right? All he does all day is practice soccer and play soccer. But look at how much money he makes. He's already a billionaire. So why is it that somebody like him makes so much money and somebody else who works so hard every day of their life makes so little money? And it doesn't make sense when you look at it. When you look at it from the outside, it doesn't make sense. But when you start understanding the law of compensation, then you start making sense. And when you look at that law, it's not about what's fair or not fair. It's not about what's right or not right. It is the same law, whether it's here in South Africa, whether it's in America, whether it's in China. It's the same law that operates. And my hope is that by the understanding of this law, it can open up something in people's minds to say, how can I use this law to help myself move ahead financially in life?
Yeah, yeah. What did you find?
What did I find?
Yeah.
Should I explain the law to you?
Sure, please.
Okay, so when we look at the law of compensation, right, the law of compensation says that there are three things that are going to determine how much money you get paid in life and how much money you make in life. Right. Some of these things are more under your direct control. Some of these things are not under your direct control, but you need to still be aware of it so that you can put yourself in the right path, in the right stream. So what are these three things that determine how much compensation you will get in life? Well, the very first thing I want to first pause on the first thing because I really want to speak especially to students who are studying, young people who are looking for a career, because this is a very important first one. And the first thing that's going to determine how much money you make in life is the need for what you do.
Right.
Right. So if you are studying something, if you are looking to go into a career, if you are building a product or a service, the first thing you need to consider, is there a need out there for what I do, right? The greater the need, the more money you can expect to get paid. And I'll tell you why I specifically speak about younger people studying right now, Aubrey, is because I often speak to lecturers who are in university, and the one thing I see is that a lot of young people are looking to study, to get a degree behind their name, to get something. But how often do people really stop and consider this point? Like, what I'm studying right now, is there going to be a need in 5 years for what I'm doing?
Yeah.
And if we take a look at how the world is changing right now, and if we take a look at how artificial intelligence is taking over the world, and if you just do a little bit of research into this, you will see many of the things that people are studying today, they believe in the next few 5 to 10 years, it's going to start becoming obsolete. In other words, there's not going to be a need for it anymore. And it will be things that will surprise you. They are talking about things like doctors, not like your general GP, not really being needed anymore because your AI systems can do a better job in future of diagnosing what's wrong with you than what your doctor can. Mm. They're talking about things like lawyers, for example. If you look at these are traditionally the kind of industries where people would say, that's what I need to go and study, engineering. I mean, there's just all the big ones that you think of today. You need to be asking yourself, am I really looking after my future by going to studying this? What if I study to be in an occupation that in 5-10 years' time is going to be obsolete? That in 5-10 years' time, people aren't going to need anymore? You see, this is the first thing you need to consider when you are looking at a career, when you are looking at what you're doing. You need to be thinking about the future and saying, listen, if I'm studying something, if I can be great at what I do in a job that I do, but if there's not a need for it anymore, if people aren't going to look to hire people with those skills anymore, then I am working against the law of compensation.
Let me ask that question to those that may be listening to this conversation right now, those young people that you referred to who are listening to this conversation even as we speak. 011-883-0702. The subjects, the career direction that you've chosen to study for, have you stopped to think about its prospects for existence in the future? Give me a call. Yeah? You are perhaps going to be writing your matric exams in a few months' time, and you're going to be preparing for a new life in tertiary studies. Have you stopped to think whether or not the career choice that you've made is going to exist in 5 years' time? Stanley Beckett is suggesting that if you work within the framework of the law of compensation, you must ask yourself those questions. You must ask the question, is what I am fixing to study towards going to be relevant such that it is a needed subject or academic subject? So give us a call, 011-883-0702. That's when you operate within the framework of the law of compensation, says Stanley Beckett. Am I on the right track there, Stanley?
Yeah, and it's such an important question. It can be a scary question to ask, you know, but rather face the reality of it now than have to face the consequences of having to pay off this huge student debt, for example, and not being able to find a job already today. It's a common thing to hear about people who have degrees and can't find work.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because there's not a need for that skill as great as what it was when they started studying.
And maybe you are almost at the end of your academic career, and you are possibly doing well, getting very, very, very good marks, passing things cum laude. Have you stopped to think whether or not the subject that you're passing so well is going to be relevant in the commercial world? Give me a call. I'd like to ask. I'd like to hear from you. And this, again, is so that you operate within the bounds, the framework of the law of compensation. Because I think it's so important, Stanley, that we ask these questions, because we reach a certain point in our lives when we've done everything that has been asked of us. We did 12 years of primary, secondary school. We did the 4 years of tertiary education. And then we find ourselves sitting with qualifications that are no longer relevant. So it's important for us to be asking these hard questions of ourselves now, because they are either going to help us reap the rewards of the law of compensation or not. Yeah?
Absolutely. And if we don't understand that, and I'm suggesting this is the reality of so many people, unfortunately, that go and study, get their degrees, and they just don't find work. And what happens then is we start blaming the economy, we start blaming the government, we start blaming everything, but we don't realize that actually everything works perfectly by law. And the law states that if there's a need for what you do, you will be compensated. If there's not a need for what you do, then the chance of being compensated in life dramatically decreases. So that's the first part. And it also works in business. You know, whenever I work with people who are either in business or wanting to start a business, especially entrepreneurs who want to start a business, this is the very first place to start, is to ask them, is there a need for my product or service, right? Have I done the market research? Have I gone out there? You know, sometimes, and I see this often in young entrepreneurs especially, they get an idea and they think it's an absolutely brilliant idea, but they've never actually tested it. They've never actually gone out there to see, do people want this product? Do people want the service? Is there a need for this? I might believe in it and I might think it's great. And, you know, it might be that people actually would want it, but the need also decreases if people don't understand your product, don't understand your service. And too often, I mean, if you look at the statistics around entrepreneurship, right, it's a really difficult life to be an entrepreneur, because the statistics show when they say businesses, let's say businesses opening this year, within the first year, over 80% of those businesses would have closed, right? And then the businesses that are still open after that first year, within the next 5 years, 80% of those businesses would have closed. So you're looking at something like 4% of businesses that open today will still be operational 6 years from today. Why is that? It's because the person running that business has not done their research properly. They haven't understood the need that there is out there in the market. So that is why the very first thing we need to understand that makes up the law of compensation is the need for what you do.
Let's take some calls. Tibos is in Johannesburg South. Tibos? Hello, Tibos? Tibos is in Johannesburg South. Tibos, do you hear us? All right, it appears Tibos is no longer there. Perhaps he'll give us a call again. Stanley, what is the law of compensation? What does it say?
So the law, like I said, the law of compensation says there's three things that make up, that determine how much you're going to be compensated. We've now spoken about the first one, which is the need for what you do.
Yeah.
The truth is there's not really much you can do about the first one. The need either exists or it doesn't. You cannot. It's very difficult to go and create a need. Some people have the ability to do that, and I'll take an example, Henry Ford. When Henry Ford thought and conceptualized the idea of building an automobile, he said, if I had to go and ask people what they want, they would have said faster horses.
Yeah.
Nobody could conceive the idea of an automobile. So once in a while, very seldom, someone does come along that creates a need that nobody actually even knew they wanted. I mean, if you ask people about cell phones, computers, all these things 50 years ago, nobody would be interested because the need wasn't created in their mind yet.
Okay. Yeah.
But that's a very difficult thing to do, to go and create a need. for most of us, the way to do it is rather to go and identify a need that is already out there. So that's your first job. That's the only responsibility you have with the first one. The second part of the law of compensation is where every person can work on, and that is your ability to do it. So the first part is the need for what you do. The second part is how good are you at doing what you need to do. So in other words, let's say, for example, you have a product or a service. How good is that product or service? Let's say you are doing a job. How good are you at your job? That is something every person needs to be working on. So if I am wanting to be an engineer, a doctor, whatever it might be, your responsibility is to continuously work on improving, continuously work on learning. You will see the people who get paid the highest in any industry, they never stop learning. They never stop growing. They never stop asking questions. They never stop working on themselves. Malcolm Gladwell, who wrote many books, Blink, he wrote Outliers, but I think it was in Outliers. He talks about a concept we've spoken about a few times called the 10,000-hour concept.
Yeah.
Where he goes back in time and he looks at the most successful people in different industries, and in all of them, they spent a minimum of 10,000 hours studying their craft, practicing their craft, building their skill. Unfortunately, Orby, again, so many of our youth don't understand the second part of this law. Mm. So many of our young people today want everything for nothing.
So, and they don't understand, so many of our old people, bro.
let's throw them into the mix too. Oh, right. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's probably everybody. But I find this a lot in the youth today. They want something for nothing. They want everything given to them, but they're not willing to invest their time. They're not willing to invest the effort that it takes. That 10,000. I mean, I myself as a business owner, Aubrey, you've known me for many years as well. You know just as well as I do how many hours it takes and how much effort it takes to get somewhere in business in life. Mm. In other words, to build that skill, to build that knowledge. So,
build the credibility.
Build that credibility. There can be the need for what you do, but you've still got to put in that effort. Because you are always going to be competing. Someone else is also doing what you're doing. Someone else is also asking for the money you're asking for. What makes you stand out is going to be your ability to do what you do. That is why the second part of the law of compensation is your ability to do it.
All right, let me take some calls. Richard is in Randburg. Good evening to you, Richard.
That's your Richard from Randburg.
Hey, Richard, how's it, man?
All right, and you?
Nice. What's your thoughts?
You know, my background is as an accountant and auditor initially as training, and then I've been in entrepreneur for 20 years.
Yeah.
Done many things. So just a quick couple of comments. And Stanley, I love your work. I really enjoy it. Enjoy your thinking and teachings.
Sure.
So one is to look at transactional income and asset-based income.
Yeah.
In other words, if you're doing transactional, I work an hour, I get compensated. If
Four
I can't work
hour,
an
yeah.
hour, I don't get compensated, dead man, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're able to invest in an asset, and the asset is able to keep producing the income, no matter where you are or what you're doing, you could be in hospital for 6 months, that's what you need to be building towards.
Yeah.
So people need to find ways to do that, and especially the youth. You know, they go into a job thinking that, I've got a qualification or I've got something and now how much are you going to pay me? One thing that I've guided my daughters on is to say to them, you need to go into your first job and do it for free because you're gaining experience. You're actually becoming accustomed to the work environment and you're getting an incredible amount of validation and initial training and orientation, which you then go to your second opportunity and you're now ahead of the next person. So you'll get that, you know, and that's your own investment in your own future. So people have to think differently. We've been schooled into, as Robert Kiyosaki would say, you know, get a qualification, get a job, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, he's absolutely right.
Right.
It's not the way you're going to sustain yourself in the future, especially with the rate of change.
Yeah.
So the second part of what I wanted to mention is that people need to be curious. And people ask me, what do you do and who are you or whatever? And I say, I'm a curious being curious.
Mm.
Because the more curiosity you have and the more you fiddle and tinker and break things and fix them and, carry on, no matter what it is. It can be cooking recipes, it can be the lawnmower, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
You're going to learn and discover things. And later in life, when you come across a problem, a unique problem perhaps, you're going to suddenly remember something you've done before. So you've got to get the 10,000 hours, as Stanley's just mentioned, was at Gladwell. I think Gladwell had coined that phrase.
Yep.
Sometimes it isn't 10,000 hours in a particular topic. It's 10,000 hours in seeking experiences.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I ended up reading charts at one stage. I knew absolutely zip about it. And got into it, learned from the vet, learned from the staff, learned from reading, learned from everything else. And my greatest teacher was the experience, my own mistakes.
Yeah.
And they say you're not a fish farmer until you've killed your fish. Or killed some of your fish. And I tell you, it's a damn expensive and hard lesson to learn.
Yeah.
But you will never make that mistake again.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of where I'm guiding people. And I've got an honors qualification in accounting and auditing and things. So I just find that some of that stuff is irrelevant because it doesn't help you to actually transact.
Yeah.
And here I'm talking transaction, but I'm talking about, you know, generate income or go and operate in the world. That's probably a better way of saying it.
Yeah.
It really doesn't equip you to do that. I could take somebody in a weekend and I can actually get them into an income stream and helping them to grow something that's sustainable and will support them for life and probably be way more or risk-free, safer. You know, getting all the way up into retirement age than following a career and studying a
Richard, I'm going to let you go, my brother. Thank you so much for that call. We're talking the law of compensation, yeah? Yeah? The principles that you need to understand in order for you to be able to sustainably demand from life a sustainable income. Casper is in Radio Corp. Hi, Casper.
Hey, hello, bro. Ops, how are you?
I'm well, my brother. What's on your mind?
I like the show, and it's very educational.
Thank you.
And I agree with Stanley when he says the law of the compensation, it's based on the fact that whatever you're doing, savings or whatever you're selling, it has to be in demand for you to be compensated accordingly.
Yeah.
That's very true. But now, here's another scenario. What about, for example, the fact that salt was sold very expensive? The minute people tested salt, they needed it. And the people were supplying salt. They sold it so expensive because people didn't know how easy it was to get it. But people didn't stop wanting salt because it tasted good. Now, we have seen this, that people are very easy to provide the services because we don't know how easy it is for them to get the or to do whatever they are doing for us or
sure.
sell whatever they are selling to us. But we don't know how easy it is for them to get. We give them the money that they don't. It's a secret. So I don't know how Stanley can explain to us that how do you compensate a person that will raise the price so high because we don't know how easy for him to get that. And we compensate him, but he doesn't deserve it because it's so easy for him to get it, just making a lot of money.
Yeah, but he does deserve it. But he does deserve it, Casper. The very fact that he is giving you the convenience of the access to that thing without you having to go through what he goes through to bring it to you is what you're paying for. So,
exactly.
And you're not just paying for the product; you're paying for the convenience of your access to the product as brought to you by the person that is selling it to you.
I agree, but what about the fact that the service that is providing to me doesn't cost him that much?
But that's not what he's. That's not the agreement here. The agreement is that you need this thing, and I can give it to you. Because if indeed you are disputing the price at which I'm selling it to you, then you are welcome to go and get it yourself.
Yeah. It's so nice for you to say that. But I remember when we had the problem of mask, and the mask was selling for like 50 rand. And the Competition Commission had to intervene because of such things.
Sure. But for as long as you, the buyer, are still willing to buy something at a particular price, then that's the price of the thing. If it gets to a point where you are no longer willing to buy that particular product at that price, that changes things. Because you can then say to the seller, you can go jump, I'll go get it myself. But while you are not willing to go and get it yourself, and you use the convenience of it being brought to you by the seller, then you will pay the price.
Take, for example, petrol. If I don't want to buy it because it's too expensive, where am I going to get it from?
You're not going to get it.
Okay,
thanks very much for your call. Much appreciated, Stanley.
Yeah, I like those two calls. And thank you firstly to Richard because he brought something important up that I'm going to come back to. And let me start with Casper. You were absolutely right, Orby. And we haven't even spoken about the third point, which will then also make more sense when you bring it. But let me talk about what Casper was saying. You are going to decide how much you need that thing, that product or that service. That's going to determine how much you're willing to pay, right?
Yeah.
If you need it very much, you will pay for it.
Yeah.
If you don't need it that much, you won't pay for it. That is why the need for what you do is going to be a determining factor on a price. But there's a second thing that's going to determine the price, and is the third part of the law of compensation. And that is the difficulty there is in replacing you or the product or the service. If Costco goes, for example, and he wants to buy something and he thinks the price is too high, and you can go to 50 other places the same day and get it for a cheaper price, then the compensation price goes down.
Yeah.
But if he goes in for that service and that's the only person that can give it to him is that person, then whether he's going to pay that person whatever they ask is going to be determined by how much he needs it. You see, the law works that way. How big is the need? How good is the product or service that you're buying, and how difficult is it to replace? How much competition is there? Where can I go and buy that same thing at every street corner? Or is there only a specific person, like let's take, for example, a brain surgeon. When it comes to having brain surgery, I'm not going to go to every single GP and say, can you do a brain surgery for me? I'm going to go to a specialist. And the specialist charges you that high, and you're willing to pay because it might save your life. You need that specialist. Whatever he charges for you, you are going to pay that because you know he's the best at what he does, and you know probably doing what he does is irreplaceable.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to replace. It's difficult to find anyone who can do the job he does. In that instance, you're paying a high amount, and you won't even think twice about it.
Mm.
So you really need to consider all of these. And then I also just want to quickly say what Richard said that was really important. And I think it's important to distinguish the two here because he made a very good point. Is that, remember, we're talking here about compensation. In other words, what are you going to be paid for what you do? I just want to separate that from becoming wealthy through investments and starting a business. For example, let's just talk about investments because that's not the same thing. That's becoming wealthy on another level. I'm talking about being compensated. If you are going out there and you're looking for a job and you want to be compensated for what you do,
yep,
then you have to consider these three things. Number one, the need for what you do. Number two, your ability to do it. And then number three, how difficult are you to be replaced? How difficult it is to replace you? Like, let's take, for example, a salesperson.
Yeah.
Is there a need for salespeople? Always. There will always be a need for good salespeople. If you want to make a lot of money, because some salespeople make a huge amount of money. Some of the richest people are people who are great at sales.
Yeah.
Because they've honed part number two, their ability to do it. They've sharp, they are really good at what they do. And if there's a need which already exists, there will always be a need for good salespeople. And if the person is really good, the best at what he does, he becomes very, very difficult to replace.
Yep.
And such a person can demand a very high salary.
Yep.
A person who might be a salesperson, there might be a need, but they're not very good at what they do and they're easy to replace. Such a person cannot demand a high compensation. So that is why you need to consider all three points when you're talking about what is this law of compensation.
I think Casper makes a very good point, though, in terms of the management of runaway market-driven realities. In other words, that's why we have a competitions commission, for example, where where we can perhaps make a case to say that monopolies sometimes can be a problem. Cartels and the collusion of various companies to drive prices up or prices down. That's just criminal behavior. And that is when we do need the intervention of governments in the form of competition commissions to make sure that things are sold at fair value. So I think I get what Casper is talking about at that level. But I think what we are talking about, or what you're talking about specifically, are the broader principles of the law of compensation, that you need to be able to find something that you can put into the market because there's a need for it. And you've got to be able to articulate that need so that people can know that you've got it available to them at a particular price.
Agreed, Aubrey, but even these, and sorry, I couldn't hear Casper properly, so I didn't hear all the points he was trying to make. And now that you're saying it, I'm hearing what you're saying. But I want to say that even there, Aubrey, you know, that even those people that you see as scrupulous are actually working within the law. Even if they all come together and say, let's drive up the price, what determines their ability to drive up the price is the need.
Yep.
If people have need and they cannot get what they need, that's going to determine what a person is willing to pay.
Yep.
You know, and we
see that happening right now with the price of oil. OPEC mm-hmm. decides that we're not gonna produce as much oil as possible in order for us to drive up the price. And really, there's very little that the rest of us can do. You know, they simply get together. They say, listen, we're going to produce less oil so that we can drive up demand. And by driving up demand, we're going to be driving up the price. So I absolutely understand exactly what you're saying there, Stanley. I want to get to the third principle in the law of compensation.
Yeah, and the third one is the one I mentioned earlier, which was the difficulty in replacing you. That's the third one. So the better you get at what you do, the more difficult it becomes to replace you. And the more difficult you become to be replaced, the more you can demand compensation. So let me use the two examples I said to you I was going to talk about in the beginning. Let's talk about that person who comes in every day and cleans your home. Okay, so let's give, and this was an exercise I did with a group on Monday. I said, all right, let's give a score out of 10. Number first one, that person, what is the need for someone like that? And I'm arguing to say the need is almost a 10 out of 10, because most of us, if we didn't have someone looking after us and helping to clean our houses, we would all live in squander, right? We really need somebody because we don't have the time to do it ourselves.
Mm.
And we don't want to do it ourselves. So I would argue that the need for someone like that is actually quite high. Then we go to the second one and say the ability to do it. That person might be really great at her job. You might say, wow, this person is fantastic because she cleans fantastic. She listens to what I do and what I ask her to do. She's always on time. She's always does everything wonderfully. Her ability to do it can be like 10 out of 10. But where someone like that falls short is in the difficulty of replacing. So, because you know, you can drive down the street corner and go and find, whenever I go to a shop here close to me, there's always 50, 50 people standing around asking for a job, saying, I can do the same job, right? So that person in the law is actually very easy to replace. You can easily replace that with somebody else. That person can walk today, and within 20 minutes later, you can have somebody else to come in and do the job. They might not do it as great as what she did, but they can do the same job.
Yeah.
So that person cannot expect a high compensation in life because according to those three laws, she's actually very low in the score.
Mm.
But now let's take somebody like Lionel Messi. And let's because that's something everybody knows who I'm talking about when I'm talking about that. And let's look at those three things. Number one, is there a need for what Lionel Messi does? Now, this is always interesting because whenever I'm in a training session or talking to people and I ask that question, people will say, no, there isn't a need. And I say, of course there is a need. One of the biggest needs we have as human beings is the need to be entertained. People will pay almost all of their money monthly just to find entertainment, whether it's through television, whether it's through watching sport, whether it's going out. people have a huge need to be entertained. And if you don't believe it, just go and look at these European Cups and these soccer games all over the world, how full those stadiums are. For people, people are willing to pay thousands, if not tens of thousands, if not higher than that, just to go and watch one football game.
Right.
So the need is very high. Then we take a look at the second step.
It's important, yeah? I suppose, Stanley, to talk a little bit about this idea of need. Need does not necessarily mean something that people cannot do without. It can mean that it is a demand. Yeah. So for example, people would probably live quite well without having to watch a soccer game, right? A football game. But there's a demand for it, which is what you are referring to as need.
Absolutely. And right. I think of something like, why do movie stars get paid so much money?
Yep.
They get paid $20, $30 million for one movie.
Yep.
Because people have a need to be entertained. There's a huge need for it. There's a huge industry around it. Right? Then we go to the second part, his ability to do it. What is Lionel Messi's ability to do it? It's a 10 out of 10. He's the best. He's won how many of those trophies for the best football player in the year of the world? He's probably recognized as the best football player of all time.
Yeah.
So his ability to do it is 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Then we go to the third step. If Lionel Messi was playing in your team, how difficult is it to replace him with another Lionel Messi? It's also almost impossible. Yes, you can find other football players, but you are not going to find another Lionel Messi out there. There's only one of a kind. So that is why he gets paid the money that he gets paid. Because according to the law of compensation, all three of those areas are high. There's a need for what he does. His ability to do it is he's the best in the world at what he does, and he's impossible to replace. You can't find another Lionel Messi. And if you can look at those two examples, hopefully those listening in tonight can start, because then if you can understand this, then you can then ask yourself, if I am not being compensated in life the way I want to be, where am I falling short? Mm. Is it that I'm in something where there isn't a need? Is it that I need to improve my ability to do it? Or is it that there's so much competition that I'm easy to replace, maybe I need to go and find something where I'm more difficult to replace?
Mm. All right, give us a call, 011-883-0702. How's this law of compensation thingy working for you? Yeah? Do you score highly on all three counts of the components of the law of compensation? I'd love to take your calls on 011-883-0702. Stanley Beckett says, the law of compensation, properly applied, properly understood, properly curated, may put you into a place where you can literally demand of life whatever you want in terms of wealth. And I think that the first question I asked earlier on is still quite apt. Are you making business, career, study decisions that are based on your understanding of those three principles? Because folks, you may spend time, money, and effort on something that is going to be absolutely obsolete. Something that is going to be absolutely an irrelevant. How much time do you spend thinking about how relevant your career choice, your business idea is within the framework of the market that you serve, the technological advancements of that market that you serve, the future of that market that you serve? It's important, it's critically important for you to understand that those are questions that you must ask in order for you to be operating within the framework of the law of compensation. Let me ask, take a call from Maria in Johannesburg. Good evening to you, Maria. Hello? Mariah, is it Mariah? Marla. Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, Marla. Hi, Marla.
Hi, I thought you were talking to someone else.
I'm sorry. I must have been talking to somebody else. Go ahead and welcome to the show, Marla.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
I'm fine. No, I just completely missed the whole gist of, I think, what was a really great lesson in the first part of the show. So I was giving my last part of contribution, which is, I actually find that competition doesn't hinder me in any way. And I think it shouldn't hinder anyone, because there's a weird thing, especially, I would say, in the Black community, where competition sends a message of, panic, when essentially it shouldn't make you panic.
We saw a scary case of that just a few days ago at Maponya Mall with the e-hailing taxi drivers versus the, shall we call them, the non-e-hailing taxi drivers, yeah?
Ironically, I hadn't even gone there with my mind, but yes, that's a great example.
Yeah.
That's a great example. Now off guard. I was going to say that, like in the Mabopane area, for example, people, you're a mom's boy. People sell goats and sheep across different freeways, different throughways. And ironically, on the ground, the assumption amongst the people who actually sell is that, hey, the more of us there are that sell, the less business we're getting. And ironically, it's the opposite.
Yep.
The more of you that sell, the bigger the pie becomes, because people will say to themselves, hey, you're in a kapuhudi, man. And instead of going to Soweto, they'll say reliably from Attridgeville, instead of spending petrol to go to Soweto, we'd rather spend much less petrol to go either local inside or a little bit further to Sosha or to Harangua or wherever, where we know there's lots of guys selling the same thing and we're guaranteed to get what we want. And it's not an intimidating or a bad thing to have basically High 57, High 55, High 57, High 58 selling the same thing. It shouldn't be intimidating. For some reason, it has become that way.
I remember, Marla, a conversation that I had about a place called Gesina in Pretoria. I don't know if you're familiar with Gesina.
I know Gesina.
Yeah, apparently Elon Musk comes from there.
There's no such thing.
I'm serious. Apparently Elon Musk comes from Gesina, or he grew up in a certain part of Gesina. But that's neither here nor there. The issue is this.
Interesting.
You'll find that Gesina was known as the hub of car sales, secondhand car sales. You know, if you wanted to buy a car in Pretoria back in the day, the place to go would be Gesina, because there were so many car dealerships, or car dealerships, whether secondhand or new car sales there. And I remember having a conversation with a professor at the University of Pretoria about that, and he said exactly what you're saying now, that in fact it is these hubs, these nodes of similar selling products that are more competitive, because people know that that's where they're going to find something. So a majority of the market is going to be funneled through to that, because there's the understanding that that's where product or the needed product is. So absolutely agree with you that we shouldn't be afraid of that kind of competition.
And before you even cut me off, it really becomes exactly what I think they're trying to do in Johannesburg, where the more you do the same thing in one space, the less you intimidate the person next door, because what you're actually doing is making the pie bigger. And not only are you making the pie bigger, diversification of a product doesn't need to cost the person who has no capital $1 million to try and compete with a neighbor. You can, especially your capital input can be R1, and then your neighbor, it's like, think
absolutely of the trust. I think it's a very, very sound economic principle there that Marla is raising. Dikeledi Wahamalebia says, compensation in the professional fields entails a lot, vis-a-vis qualifications, experience, time spent on doing the work, and the quality of the work as well. I've seen a lot of professionals selling themselves short out of desperation. Absolutely. Stanley, how do you respond to that? Although I do want to say that compensation as remuneration versus the idea of the law of compensation may be two different conversations, Stanley, as we close.
I agree on that. And as I close, I'm thinking of something Marlo said, and I think of, you know, whenever it comes to competition, and this is what a principle I've lived my life on since I heard it. There was once where Tiger Woods was busy warming up for a competition he was going to be in. And one of the people who was interviewing asked him, what does he think when he looks around and he sees everybody else warming up? Does he think, how good is this guy? And is this how is he going to compete against this person? And he said, Tiger Woods said to him, I always stand there and I shake my head and I wonder, why did any of them even bother pitching up today? Because there's only going to be one person who's going to win. And then he said something that stuck with me forever. He said, amateurs compete, professionals create. And I really believe that we must get out of the spirit of competition and into the spirit of creation. And when you can do that, then it doesn't matter what anybody else is doing, because you are no longer competing against anybody else. You are only competing against yourself, and you're only creating yourself and asking, how can I do this better and better? And if you can understand that concept, it will take you a long way towards understanding also the law.
How do we get in touch with you, Stanley, as we close?
As we close, if anybody would like to speak to me, they can email Stanley@changecreatorsa.com, changecreatorsa.com, or they can go to our website, changecreatorsa.com. At the bottom is a place where they can leave a message. If they want to get a hold of us, they can get a hold of us there as well.
Stanley Beckett, author and coach at Change Creator SA. Thank you very much. Let's take